From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherie Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, one of the most popular and outspoken rappers, Ice-T. A couple of years ago, his song Cop Killer caused a fury about the place of gangster rap in our culture. He's written a new book which gives his take on racism, crime, sex, the LA riots, prostitution, and pimping. Ice-T says he didn't write the book to make you like him, but he hopes that you do. A talk with Ice-T about his life and music coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The United States says Japan hasn't lived up to a promise to open its cellular phone market. Trade Representative Mickey Cantor says he'll publish sanctions the U.S. may consider using if the dispute isn't resolved. Japan has a $50 billion trade surplus with the United States, and trade talks between the countries collapsed last week. Both sides have talked about preparing for a trade battle. NATO and the United Nations still do not agree over the interpretation of NATO's ultimatum to the Bosnian Serbs. The two sides will meet tomorrow in Croatia. They'll try to reach an agreement on how the Bosnian Serbs must remove their heavy weapons from around Sarajevo to meet the deadline. The BBC's David Eads reports from Brussels.
The differing interpretations given by NATO and the UN in Bosnia of what constitutes UN control of heavy weapons has cast an air of confusion over the countdown to NATO's deadline. In an effort to lift that confusion, NATO officials have spelt out what they meant when they issued their ultimatum to the Bosnian Serbs last week. Heavy weapons left within the Sarajevo exclusion zone must be neutralized. It must not be possible to use the guns again. Jim Mitchell is NATO's Chief of Information at Southern Command Headquarters in Naples.
We want the guns to not be weapons anymore.
The clarity of the statement is intended to instill once again the unequivocal nature of NATO's threat to the Bosnian Serbs and to the mainly Muslim Bosnian government, which also has heavy weapons around Sarajevo.
David Eads reporting. The chief of U.S. naval operations is retiring 2 months early because of the tailhook sexual abuse scandal. Admiral Frank Kelso says he's become the lightning rod for the scandal. A military judge has ruled Kelso knew about the sex abuse at the 1991 Tailhook Aviators Convention and that he covered it up. Kelso adamantly denies this. A Louisiana drifter has surprised a courtroom in Gainesville, Florida, by pleading guilty to the murders of 5 college students in 1990. Cindy Hospin of member station WUTF reports from Gainesville.
Today was to have been the first day of jury selection in the case, but Rowling surprised a Gainesville courtroom by agreeing to enter a guilty plea in the murders of 5 college students in 1990. Rowling's told Circuit Court Judge Stan Morris, "There are some things you just cannot run from." The trial was to have been a display of evidence gathered through high-tech methods. It would have also been the first time prosecutors would outline the grisly details of the 5 killings in late August of 1990. For National Public Radio, I'm Cindy Hosbein in Gainesville, Florida.
On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 25 points at 3,929. Trading is heavy on volume of 296 million shares. The Nasdaq is up 4 at 789. This is NPR. The Federal Reserve says industrial production rose 0.5% last month. That rise came in spite of severe winter weather on the East Coast and the Los Angeles earthquake. The central bank says the advance was the 8th consecutive monthly increase. The Federal Reserve also reports the operating rate at American factories, mines, and utilities rose to 83.1%. That's up 0.2%. But there's a problem here. Economists worry that as the operating rate gets closer to 85%, production bottlenecks could happen. Then it'll take longer for goods to be built, and scarce goods will cost more. Figure skater Tanya Harding is headed for the Olympic Games in Norway. A grand jury is still investigating allegations she was involved in the attack on skater Nancy Kerrigan. Tess Vigeland of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports.
As Harding left for the long flight to Lillehammer, she told reporters and fans gathered at the airport that she hopes her performance will be as good as teammate Tommy Moe's. Mo won the United States' first gold medal of the Games Sunday in the downhill ski competition. Harding's Olympic hopes were in limbo as late as last Saturday, but then her attorneys cut a deal with the U.S. Olympic Committee allowing her to skate in the women's competition. In exchange, Harding dropped a $25 million lawsuit against the committee. While Harding is in Norway, prosecutors in Portland will continue their criminal investigation into whether she was involved in the assault on Kerrigan. Harding also faces a hearing before the U.S. Figure Skating Association upon her return and possible disciplinary action by the Olympic Committee, which has the power to strip her of any medals she might win. For National Public Radio, I'm Tess Vigeland in Portland.
The International Atomic Energy Agency says North Korea has agreed to open part of its nuclear program to inspection. The IAEA says the about-face by Pyongyang comes about a week before the whole matter was supposed to be taken up by the UN Security Council. The council could have put trade sanctions on North Korea unless the country let the inspectors in. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Ice-T, is one of the most controversial performers of today's most controversial music, gangster rap. This music is despised by many who see it as glorifying and glamorizing gangs, guns, drugs, and fast sex. But as you'll hear, to Ice-T, what he raps about is the truth of the life he once led. Ice-T is generally acknowledged as one of the most talented rappers because of his rhymes and his voice. His voice is also used to great effect as an actor. He co-starred in the films New Jack City and Trespass. His record Cop Killer is among the most controversial rap records ever made. In fact, after many protests against the record, he pulled the track from his CD Body Count. Now he's put his thoughts on paper in his new book, The Ice Opinion. A little later, we'll talk about the controversies over the language he uses, so listener discretion is advised. Let's start with an autobiographical rap from his latest album, Home Invasion. This is called That's How I'm Living.
I was born in New Jersey. I said it before, but I guess nobody heard me. My mother died young. No sisters or brothers. I was the only son. When I was 12, my pops died too. What's a brother supposed to do? They sent me out west. To live with my aunt, I guess they thought that was the best. But there was no love there. But growing with no moms, I guess I was prepared to live in a vacuum. The bedroom, the kitchen, the hall, the bathroom. I didn't leave home much. Didn't like LA. Didn't have no friends to trust. Got bused to a school. Blacks and whites, I guess it was cool. But by high school, I changed. Didn't want to bust. Didn't want
to. Ice-T, welcome to Fresh Air. You were really one of the first gangster rappers. Did you relate to party rap when rap was starting?
When I first got off into rap, I tried to rap in the party rap type style because I was under the impression that's what rappers did. But it was kind of like I was faking it because I had never really rapped in parties and things like that. I was trying to rap like Sugar Hill Gang. And then I just started rapping about the life I was living. And that's how, you know, they call it gangster rap, but I call it reality-based rap, you know. And that's how that form of music got started.
Now, how did you start doing that? What was the turning point where you decided you weren't going to try to fake it and do the party raps, that you were going to talk about the life you knew?
Well, my first record ever I made was a record called Coldest Rap, and it was on a record called Cold Wind. One side was called Cold Wind Madness, and that was on an independent label. And it was very reality-based. But it was so early in rap. This is like 1982. And everybody else was rapping, you know, Run DMC style, LL Cool J and stuff. So I just was going along with the trend, you know, the way they go. But then after a while, my friends were like, you know, Ice, man, talk about what we do, man. Talk about how we live. And I did this song called Six in the Morning. It was a B-side. I really didn't think that that was what people wanted to hear, but the B-side turned out to be the biggest record and ended up being my identity, really.
Could you do a couple of lines from that?
What, Six in the Morning?
Maybe not, huh?
Yeah, I could do it. You know, okay. I mean, it went Six in the Morning, police at my door, fresh Adidas squeaked across the bathroom floor, out the back window I made my escape. Didn't even get a chance to grab my old school tape, mad with no music, but happy because free, and the streets to a player is the place to be. Got a knot in my pocket, weighing least a grand, gold on my neck, my pistol's close at hand. I'm a self-made monster of the city streets, remotely controlled by hard hip-hop beats. But just living in the city is a serious task. Didn't know what the cops wanted, didn't have time to ask.
Now, what was the very first time you took a microphone?
I was in the Army, and the record called Rapper's Delight had came out, and that was the first time I'd ever really heard it done to music. And on the B side of it, it was an instrumental. So here I am trying to say my rhymes over this instrumental. And they didn't really fit because they weren't written that way, you know. But that was my first attempt. And I came home attempting to do what, you know, they call rapping now.
Do you remember anything you said that very first time?
Well, I tried to say the street rhymes that I had been saying on the streets, you know, strolling through the city in the middle of my night, niggas on my left and niggas on my right. I used to sing like gang rhymes. I used to say rhymes that had to do with living in the streets, you know, and they just didn't fit, you know. But I started writing like party rhymes, like my name is Ice-T, I'm here, I'm your DJ tonight, I'm here to rock y'all hard, I'm gonna rock you right, I'm gonna move you in, I'm gonna move you out, that kind of stuff. But that wasn't really what I was about, so I got back to the drama.
Right, right. And then did you feel like you had to find a different kind of music to fit it?
No, because music to me was the second thing. I was into the rhyming and the poetry that was involved. You know, the music always got in the way. And when we started doing the albums, I made a conscious decision never to make music that was danceable. Like, no, I didn't want to make dance-orientated beats. At this point now, we're starting to move more toward that, to try to make music that you can bounce to along with listening to the lyrics. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you've even criticized some hardcore rappers who abandon hardcore and do more dance music. What's wrong with dance music?
No, nothing's wrong with it. But, I mean, hardcore rap, it, to me, is the difference between pop and hardcore. Is with hardcore, you're saying exactly what's on your mind. You're being true to your feelings. Now, whether that pushes somebody the wrong way, that's just what being real is about. But there's a lot of people out there that want to get on the radio. So the radio dictates to you what you have to say. You have to be politically correct, so to speak. And when I see guys that at one time were very aggressive about certain things, and then I see them get softer to try to go onto the radio, I just, you know, to me that's weak, you know. But I never really pull names. I just say it to them because kind of breaks my heart when I see somebody who used to be real dancing around on the video looking all stupid. Now, well, if that's what you do, don't get me wrong. If you are a pop rapper, I have no problem with that. You know, I love MC Hammer. I love Fresh Prince. And I love Kid and Play. That's them. But I'm talking about it's like tomorrow if you went out and you saw one of my videos and all of a sudden I got on some, like, a yellow raincoat and I'm dancing around and you know, you're like, what are you doing? That's what I'm talking about.
When you started making records, though, did you ever worry that all the traditional avenues that people hear records would be closed to you? It wasn't going to be in the jukeboxes or on the radio because of four-letter words.
I really didn't care because, to me, I did it to have fun. It was fun. It turned into being an occupation, but you got to remember, when I started rapping, nobody was making any money at it. There was Run DMC. It was like... Now kids listen to it and say, oh, wow, I can get paid. Mm-hmm. But me, I did it for fun. And that was my only, like, prerequisite as far as doing music, and still is with entertainment. It's like, if I can't have fun, I can't do it. I mean, that's one of the main reasons I pulled off Warner Brothers, is because I got to be able to do it my way. If I can't have fun, then why would I write a book or make a... I got to do it my way. That's what it's about.
Ice-T is my guest, and he has a new book called The Ice Opinion. When you're rapping, do you think of yourself as doing it in persona, or is that everything you say is you?
Oh, there's lots of ways to rap. Sometimes I want to become characters, and I can play a drug dealer or a drug addict. You know, I could become any person. You know, like in Cop Killer, I became a psychopath that went on a rampage. You know, that's not me. I'm not a psychopath that went on a rampage. I make records, you know, so it's like I become certain people. Other times I say just crazy things, and other times I say things that are totally sincere and true, and I mean them. That's the hard part about understanding rap. It takes a real rap fan to really know, and within one sentence I can go from fact to fiction to total fiction back to something I definitely mean.
Do you want your fans to know the difference between what's a character and what's really you?
Yeah, that's why when I do interviews and I talk to people, I don't come on and try to act hard and whoop whoop and all that old extra stuff. You know, I try to be normal. I mean, I drink milk. I play video games. I bounce my little baby on my knee. I'm a normal person. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like I always compare it to like horror film writers and producers. If you met Stephen King, I don't know, would you expect him to reach over and pull your heart out of your chest, or would you think that he's just a writer? It's like that, you know. Everybody's capable of making up insane characters. I mean, I got a tough side to me, but I don't have to walk around and, you know, flaunt it. I don't need to do that.
Before you started rapping, were you really good at talking? Could you talk your way out of tough situations and talk your way to use that as a con, too, when you needed it?
Exactly. I'm a much better talker than I am a fighter. I'm not really into, you know, conflicts with people. And I went to school and I did fairly well in my last few years of school when I realized that education was something that was necessary. And yeah, I can talk. I mean, that's what I really do for a living now. So I've learned to even talk better since I've been in the music business. And I've been doing so many interviews and been in so many debates and stuff. So I read a lot more now and, you know, try to keep my skills up.
What have you been reading?
What we're reading right here, we're just reading America's Military Policy on Small Wars.
Is this in a magazine or is that a
book? No, it's a little book I just got here. This is the case of El Salvador. I'm into information stuff. Anything I can, I learned a word in this book. I just found this word. You know what PSYOPS is?
Spell it for me?
PSYOPS. P-S-Y.
Oh, Special Service.
No,
you tell me.
PSYOPS.
Right. Psychological operations or something?
Yeah. So I'm learning about that. So you'll hear that in a rap. So I suck up information and try to put it back out on a beat because I know everybody ain't going to read this book. You know, they say, you know, there's a sad black joke. They say, how do you hide something from somebody black? You put it in a book. So I'm aware that a lot of, you know, my peers won't pick up books. So I pick them up and try to distribute the information another way.
Uh-huh. Now, you grew up in New York.
You know what that word meant, boy. I need to go kick it with you for a little while.
I end up interviewing the people who write these books. you grew up in New York, at least when you were very young. You were in New York.
Yeah, New Jersey.
In New Jersey, yeah. Thank you. And your parents died when you were young. Both of your parents were dead, I think, by the time you were 12. Can I ask how they died?
My mother died from a heart attack. And my father just died. I don't know. I just was called from school one day, and they're like, your pops is dead. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, I never really got into his actual cause of death. He wasn't killed or anything, you know. He was, at the time, I knew he had gone through a lot of pain, like arthritis and stuff like that. And they sent me from there. They told me, okay, well, you're going to come to L.A. for the summer.
Who's they? Who told you?
His sister, my aunt. Uh-huh. And then they were, then the next before, when I got there in like 1 week, then all of a sudden all my clothes popped up out there in boxes. So I kind of like got shipped to California.
So that's how you ended up in L.A.?
Yeah, living with my father's younger sister, who wasn't really a nice woman. She was kind of like a woman who said, I'm taking care of you because I got to shut up, sit down, all that. You know, so a lot of kids get moved around like that.
In your book, you said that she was a religious woman?
Nah, she wasn't a religious woman. She was a drunk. She was a social worker, a woman who would go around and analyze whether kids should stay in foster homes and stuff. And she was a terrible person. She's like old drunk. She wasn't nobody qualified to do anything like that. You know, I mean, it was rough on me, but I left there when I was like 17 years old because, you know, that's not the kind of environment you're supposed to be raised in, where somebody's like, I'm taking care of you because I gotta and all that kind of stuff. You know, the word love and caring and all that's, you know, not even in the house.
So where did you go at 17?
I got my own place. I took a little money I was getting for Social Security. I was receiving Social Security check, $250 a month. And I got an apartment, which was $100 a month. I took another $100 and put it into the food and stuff I had to buy, and I had $50 extra. And I was still in high school.
Now, what high school were you going to?
Crenshaw.
This was in South Central?
Yeah. Dead the center of that's the dead center of Los Angeles, Crenshaw High School.
Now, if I have this straight, you had been, I think, at the suggestion of your aunt, bused to an integrated school that you didn't like. And then you wanted to go to school in South Central?
Well, not really. She lived in a nice area of Los Angeles. They lived in an area called Baldwin Hills. She lived in a nice neighborhood. It's like upper class blacks.
Uh-huh.
And they just, all the kids from that neighborhood got bused. I had no choice in busing to junior high. But when I got time to go to high school, a lot of those kids from up there wanted to continue to get bused to Palisades High, which was another, you know, white high school. But there was a Crenshaw High School was right across the street. It was walking distance, you know? So I was like, I don't want to catch the bus. I'll walk to Crenshaw. Everybody in the hills were like, ooh, you don't want to go to Crenshaw, though, you know? I'm like, why not, you know? And so I just walked across the street to the school that was closer.
My guest is rapper Ice-T. He has a new book called The Ice Opinion. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ice-T. So when you started going to Crenshaw High School in South Central, did you fall in with a different group of people than you'd been friends with before?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because in the hills, you don't have no friends, you know? I mean, there's not that many kids up in there. It's different, you know? They're, like, different kinds of kids. And I always was, I don't know why, but I've always been, like, really based in real people, you know? And I got to Crenshaw High School, and I hooked up with the gangs, you know? Because the whole school was being operated by gangs. So these guys, I didn't look like I was joining a gang. I just looked like they were my friends, you know. And I was all more of an affiliate member. I never really would claim a particular set, but I was known by a lot of the gang members. And that particular school was a Crip school. And I didn't see anything wrong with them. I mean, I got a lot of love. I got more love from my friends and their parents than I ever got at home.
Is that part of the reason why you wanted to be with them?
Well, I had no options. I was just down there. So now here I am, I got my own apartment, and I'm starting to hang out with all these different kids, but it was real cool, you know what I'm saying? And their parents weren't like my aunt, uppity aunt. They were like, yo, you know, you cool, you know, you my baby now, and it was cool. And I would go over to their house and eat dinner and kick it with them, and it was real. There's a lot of love in the ghetto. It's a lot of love there, much more than upper class people lock their doors to most people. They don't cross it around.
It must have been good to have your own apartment. I mean, when you're in high school, somebody's got their own apartment. That's
makes you the man.
Yeah.
Well, that did happen, you know. All my friends and stuff, I got, you know, I had the pad, and it turned me like into a leader, you know. So by just being a little bit in front of everybody else, I have friends always over. They could spend the night. It was funny, a lot of people would run away for like 2 days. I'm running away, I'm living with you, you know. You can't run away. Then their mother would come to my house and like, where's Nate, you know? Like, get out of here, he's hiding in the closet, you know. It was interesting. But also what ended up happening, I ended up having a teenage pregnancy too.
A girlfriend?
Yeah, or... my girlfriend. She was in the 10th grade, but you know, I'm Mr. Man at about town, got my own apartment, whoop, now I got a baby. So, you know.
So what'd you do?
A little too much freedom, huh? At that point, I tried to stay down with the kid, but you know, that's when all of a sudden a bit of responsibility tried to hit me, and that's when I joined the military.
But that meant getting away from the baby, right?
Not really. It was just a job. It was a way of doing something. You know, at that point, I was on the streets. I was trying to go to technical college, but, you know, crime was knocking there at my door like, hey, man, you know, you only got 50 extra bucks. If you steal this car radio, you got 300 extra bucks. So what are you going to do? You know, you can't get a job at this point, you know. So it was a cross. And I just said, yeah, I'm going to try to go in the Army. And I went in the Army.
So are you still in touch with the woman who had the baby? And
oh, yeah,
with,
definitely.
With the baby?
Yeah, my daughter lives with me now.
Oh, she does?
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's cool and stuff, you know. But, you know, I went, when I came out of the Army, all my friends who were small-time little, you know, petty crooks now were bigger crooks, you know. And that's how I got off involved in all the different, you know, crimes, attempting to, you know, get over.
So what kind of crimes were they doing? With
everything. You know, you name it, we did it, you know. But basically anything, everything that you could do without actually bringing bodily harm to somebody. I didn't hang around with a bunch of violent guys that were into, you know, hurting people and kidnapping, but they would rob a store, or burglarize something, or steal something, and some of them sold drugs and things like that. But, you know, I never was like off into just, you know, the mugging type of a thing.
Mm-hmm. But did the crimes often turn to violence, like armed robbery? Did anyone ever have to use the weapon?
Yeah, well, crime always will turn to violence eventually. You know, I mean, even if you say, hey, I'm just going to sell weed, eventually if you're going to sell enough weed to get a car. But if you want a house, you got to sell much more of it. By the time you sell that, now you become a target for the lower rung criminals who are like, hey, I don't want to sell nothing. I just want to jack whoever got the money. So eventually you're going to have to use your muscle. And, you know, if that's not what you want to do, you're going to have to find another occupation. Some people vow for the violence in it. I never wanted to do that. You know, and it don't make me no softer to say that. You know, a lot of kids are like, oh, well, that's soft. But Don, I ain't, you know, I'm just real about it. You know, I mean, to me, violence is a last resort and it's a protection thing. It's defense.
But I think you've said you had friends who did drive-bys.
Yeah, but that's, drive-by is another, is a retaliation-based crime. A drive-by is just like, you my friend. And if I looked at you right now and said, look, as long as you live, I'm always there. And if anything ever happens to you, it's on. Nothing will ever happen to you because I love you. Now, somebody does hurt you and I carry true on my promise. That's where drive-bys are based upon. It's like retaliation. Then you got drive-bys that are based on drugs and stuff. And it's that's all stupid. Don't get me wrong. But it's not, drive-bys is not a money-making thing. That's like a payback, a retribution type of a thing.
In your book, The Ice Opinion, you wrote that you wanted to be a pimp.
Yeah.
Why did you want to be a pimp?
I admired pimps because when I was growing up, the only people that had everything around me were the pimps and the drug dealers, and I really wasn't into drugs because I don't do drugs or even drink. But I was like, girl. So I was like, hey, that's the guy I want to be. And I just admired the lifestyle. And I got involved in it for a minute, you know, tried it out. But I didn't really like it, you know, because it's a harmful type of a game. You know, people end up hurt. But now I found out that there's only two jobs in the world. There's pimps and hoes. So it's the people who work for or the people who make you work. So that's why I guess that's the oldest profession, because it's either you're a pimp or you're a hoe. So I figured it out now, so I know what's going on with it. So like I say, when I was on Warner Brothers, I was a hoe. They were the pimp. They were the work. They worked me till I was burnt out, busted, or dead. Now I'm trying to pimp myself. You
know? Is that how you see it?
Yeah, well, everything can be broken down. Everything you see on the street, it's like it's only one game, right? You have capitalism and you have different versions of it. Drug dealing is capitalism. It's all the same. It's just what the laws say is legal and who gets hurt in the meantime. You know, the oil companies sell stuff, they pollute the water, but they can play around with it. So I try to teach kids, yo, all these little skills you're learning on the streets, whether they're negative or not, if you with a little changing and editing, you can transfer them right off into big business. And especially if you're a street crook, the best place to go right now is politics, because that's where, that's like you'll find all your friends there.
Ice-T, his new book is The Ice Opinion. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. More with Ice-T on the second part of our show.
Damn, how'd I get into this scam? Rolling a car with a trunk worth 500 grand. I came up from the curb, word. First slinging rocks, now my ride's packed with crazy birds. I got a freak in the front seat. She got crazy game, might even have more than me. And that's why I don't trust her. I ain't no buster, one wrong move and I'll dust her. But she knows that, keeps a gap. Works much plastic, always stays on fat. She says she loves me. Looks deep in my eyes, sometimes cries all lies. She only loves my cash flow, long dough. The false love of a pimp and a hoe.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Coming up, we continue our conversation with Ice-T. You won't hear his songs played much on the radio, but all his albums have gone gold. He was one of the first gangster rappers. His record Cop Killer made him one of the most controversial. We'll talk about some of the controversies surrounding gangster rap coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Top Navy Admiral Frank Kelso says he's retiring early because of the Tailhook sexual abuse scandal. Kelso says he's the focus of a lot of attention over the matter and feels it would be better if he moved on. Several Pentagon officials have praised Kelso for his integrity and honesty. Last week, a federal judge dismissed three cases against Navy officers accused of participating in the sexual harassment. The judge says that Kelso interfered with the investigation. Kelso denies this vehemently. His successor is expected to be named shortly. The International Atomic Energy Agency says North Korea has given in and will allow international inspection of its 7 declared nuclear sites. The IAEA says Pyongyang made the decision about a week before the matter was supposed to go to the UN Security Council for debate. North Korea has come under heavy pressure recently to comply with the agency's request. The pressure includes threats of economic sanctions. The IAEA says North Korea still won't let inspectors visit locations that haven't been declared as nuclear sites, but still could be used to make weapons. The 5-month battle to acquire Paramount Communications is over. Viacom says it has won over rival bidder QVC. Steve Proffitt reports from Los Angeles.
This morning, Viacom announced it had collected almost 75% of Paramount stock with its tender offer, valued at roughly $10 billion. This represents a major victory for Viacom Chairman Sumner Redstone and for Paramount Chief Martin Davis. The two had originally planned a friendly merger. It's a major defeat for Barry Diller, QVC's chairman and the former head of the studio. The Viacom-Paramount deal is contingent on a separate merger agreement between Viacom and Blockbuster, the video rental chain. If the deal works out as planned, the three-way merger will result in an integrated media giant that will control film and TV production companies, cable networks, publishing interests, and video rental and distribution outlets. For National Public Radio, I'm Steve Proffitt in Los Angeles.
Police say a worker opened fire in a fast food restaurant in Tulsa, Oklahoma today. 6 people were wounded before he surrendered. 2 victims are in critical condition. 3 of the injured people are students from a nearby high school who were lunching in the Wendy's restaurant. The others were workers at the restaurant. Authorities say the man who fired was armed with a .380 semi-automatic handgun. General Motors and the United Auto Workers have averted a strike at a parts plant in Flint, Michigan. Negotiators clinched an agreement just minutes ahead of a strike deadline. The Flint plant is the sole source of many GM parts, like fuel pumps and spark plugs. Stock prices closed higher today on Wall Street. The Dow rose more than 24 points to end at 3,928. Advances led declines by a margin of 3-2. This is NPR. A Louisiana drifter has pleaded guilty to the murders of 5 college students in Gainesville, Florida. The surprise plea came just as jury selection in his trial was about to start. Danny Rowling told the judge that there are some things, quote, you just can't run from. The victims were all students at the University of Florida or Santa Fe Community College. They were killed in their apartments. Rowling is already serving 3 life terms for a string of burglaries and robberies. He could receive the death penalty for these convictions. A study suggests that many parents aren't having their children immunized against common diseases, even though they can afford it. The survey is published in this week's Journal of the American Medical Association. NPR's Barbara Campbell reports.
The study was conducted by Johnson & Johnson among 1,500 of its employees who are relatively affluent and don't skip vaccinations because they can't afford them. Parents told the researchers they had failed to have their children fully immunized because of time constraints. The parents said they had difficulty getting time off from work and fitting into the doctor's limited office hours. They also avoided the chore because of the time they expected to waste sitting in the doctor's waiting room. The study found less than half of the children in the study under age 2 had all the recommended immunizations. The researchers recommended that employers be more flexible in giving workers time off to take children to doctors, and that physicians consider more flexible working hours. I'm Barbara Campbell in Washington.
City attorneys in Corona, California are asking the state Supreme Court to stop a planned spraying in their city. Helicopters are supposed to spray the city with malathion tonight. This is a chemical that fights the destructive Mediterranean fruit fly, or the medfly. The lawyers are asking the court to hold off on the chemical application until the justices hear arguments about malathion's potential side effects to residents. I'm Corva Coleman in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Ice-T, one of the most popular and outspoken figures in rap music. He put his ideas down on paper in his new book, The Ice Opinion. Ice-T was one of the first gangster rappers, and his song Cop Killer made him one of the most controversial. It was released before the L.A. riots. There were many protests against the song by people, including law enforcement groups, who said it encouraged shooting cops. After groups threatened a boycott against Time Warner, which distributed the album, Ice-T decided to pull the song from his CD Body Count. Then he left the record company. In a little while, we'll talk about this and other controversies surrounding Ice-T's music, such as the language he uses, so listener discretion is advised. Let's start with an excerpt of Cop Killer.
Cop Killer! Cop Killer! Cop Killer! But tonight we get even.
Do you think that any of the gangster rap has hardened into a caricature of itself?
Oh yeah, a lot of it's corny. A lot of it's real fake. I mean, anytime I listen to a gangster rapper and he's talking about how tough he is and all this jail stuff and all that, and how many people, you know, he killed, and it's, you know, it's phony and fake, you know. Anytime it's glamorized to that point, I can tell you never been through it. Now, some people are artists at it. It's like Scarface does it to the point where it's like, he's like the Sam Peckinpah of rap. he writes it in such graphic details that it's like watching a feature film, you know. And I appreciate it. But then there's some kids I can just tell that have no idea what they're talking about.
Now, has listening to some of the people who you think are kind of phony and they're just posturing, has that had an effect on how you present yourself?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, what I tell new rappers I'm dealing with is don't go for the hype, go for depth. Don't go for what you think is that much more exciting. Deal in details. You know, work on something that'll make somebody, because they have a saying on the street that says game knows game, which means, if you're from the street, you'll know if I'm telling the truth just by the words I use and the phrases and how I handle certain situations. Five people could sit in a room and one of them says I'm a computer scientist and everybody else are hairdressers. So nobody knows if he's telling the truth unless somebody else in the room is a computer scientist. Then they know. And so I can sit back, and I know the hardest critics for gangster rap, or I call it hardcore rap, are the kids living it. And they can push it over on some of the suburban kids as being real. I've had a lot of kids that like, hey man, Ice, your stuff isn't as hard as the other guys. I'm like, that's because you don't, you know, you're going for the carnival gangster rap. You're not going for the real. My stuff is real. I'm hitting you just how it is. My bad guys don't get away. They end up on death row because that's how it happens.
Now, what does it make you think about when like suburban kids start emulating gangster rappers, both with the clothes and the language, when it's a life that's really, when it's a life that's not real to them because they're so far removed from it?
I don't really have a problem with them emulating it, as long as they don't emulate the violence of it, you know, dressing like it, talking like it. You know, white kids have always emulated black culture. That's nothing new, you know, back from rock and roll. I just don't want them to take it to the further extreme, because the black kids in the neighborhood, gangster rap is not fueling the negativity down there. People are like, oh, well, the rap is making the kids violent. You could take rap, you could take the news, you could take movies and books out of the hood, and it would still be a violent place, because economic and social conditions create violence. The fact that I don't have no money in my pocket and you do creates a situation where I want what you got in your pocket. That's what's going on down there. Everybody's crabs trying to get out of a barrel. And now here in the suburbs, they listen to the music and, you know, they might think that that's being tough and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't seen any results of that. I've just seen a lot of parents yelling, my kid's talking like you. All right, that's cool. You know, I don't see suburban drive-bys on the incline or anything. So it's not. I think these are just what people that don't like the music. They don't like. See, there's people out in the world want power. Right. So when they see something else get power and they have no control over it, they want to bring it down. They're like, I don't like it because they won't listen to us, but they'll listen to y'all. So I'm mad. You know, go make a rap record.
You said you don't mind kids emulating the clothes. I think, in fact, you're marketing your own line called OGG, Original Gangsta Gear.
Original Gangsta Gear. And the only reason we call it Original Gangsta Gear is because that's what people now call me, because I had an album called OG.
Uh-huh.
So that's like my side title, Ice-T, the OG, right? So instead of calling it Ice-T Gear, we called it OGG. We thought it was kind of a play on ringy words.
Don't you feel like a little bit like Elizabeth Taylor putting out her brand of perfume or something, though? Do you know what I mean? Marketing your own clothes.
Well, you know what? you know why we did it? Because I'm tired of the culture just being ripped off. You know, I mean, I've been to all these different clothing manufacturers and hip hop clothes and all that, but none of the black kids that got the styles kicking are making a dime off of this. You know, we're not getting nothing out of it. We don't own no record labels. We don't own nothing. So it's a We don't own anything, so got to keep my English correct as often as possible. But it's like, I was like, look, none of these people want to sponsor me. They're scared of me and all this. So let me make my own clothes. It's only right. If I walk on TV and I create a style, why I get a royalty off of it, you know? And then what happened is the white culture says, you shouldn't want to get any money off of anything you do. Let us get all the money off of it. That's stupid.
My guest is rapper Ice-T. He has a new book called The Ice Opinion. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Ice-T. So listen, I have to ask you about the word bitch.
Uh-huh.
And you knew I would, right?
Yeah.
It's so much rap to me seems to be about getting respect, right?
Right.
That I can't understand why so many rappers treat women with so little respect when they're so demanding of respect for themselves.
True. The word bitch and stuff is just, it's really street dialogue. In the streets, bitch, MF, nigga, are words that are used and really don't hold a lot of power. You know, I mean, this is just the bottom line. It doesn't really hold a lot of power in the hood.
But you know that if you, you know, I hope you don't mind me using this word, but if NWA calls itself niggers with attitude, that's one thing.
Right.
If a white person calls a black person that name, that means something else.
What's true? But
if a woman wants to call herself something, that's one thing. If a man calls a woman a bitch, that's something different. And as a friend and colleague says, those are fighting words.
Well, that's cool, but maybe we're saying let's fight. You know, it's like maybe we're saying whatever. You know, I feel like I got grounds to want to fight with you, woman. It's not, I could be a bitch, you know, but in the ghetto, we throw these words around. If you sat around some black kids in the hood, that's how we talk. Man, I'm a bitch. And the girls be like, oh, that nigga, he thought he had this. And we just throw it around. What it is, see, rap music is black music that's being sent back and forth to us in the ghetto. White America picked up the phone and listened to it and said, oh, how can they talk like this? This is just how we talk.
Put the phone down. But the word seems representative of other attitudes, too. Like on your latest album, Home Invasion, on the track 99 Problems,
yeah.
One of the lines is, I can't say the word, but it's a four-letter word for sex, right? So it's, I blank them all and leave them on the curb. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, that's really...
But listen to Salt and Pepper's new record. They're mm-hmm. saying the same thing about men. I mean, that's the new... See... At this point in the ghetto, we talk S-H-I-T to each other all the time. This is just how we are. It's ghetto black female sparring. We continuously do this, and this is just our thing, and we've done it. I mean, my father used to say, Ice, I could take my thing and bounce it off four parking meters and go through that window and do that guy's mama. This is how we talk. It's and see, white America just won't understand it, but I'm just going to have to say it's a black thing, and... We do it. Listen to Eddie Murphy. Listen to Rudy Ray Moore. Listen to Richard Pryor. Listen to our past history of how it is. Only thing rap has done is put it to music and let you see it. And white America don't like how we are and stuff.
Well, I'm white, so maybe you think I have no right to an opinion.
But
white people have this long history of sexism, but that doesn't make it like a thing our people do, so therefore it's cool.
But
I mean,
you
it's
don't
bad.
See, but
it's...
you don't see black people criticizing rock and roll.
Uh-huh. Well, a lot of white women criticize rock and roll.
Well, it's for you to do. You got to understand that if a woman makes a record, she's going to make it from a woman's perspective.
You know, there's a lot of black women criticizing rap now, though.
There's a lot of what black women making rap that I think is derogatory toward men.
Uh-huh.
Touché.
Okay. Who are you thinking of?
Oh, we got bitches with problems. We got hoes with attitudes out there.
These are names of groups.
Groups, yeah. The bitches with problems, hoes with attitudes. Queen Latifah, MC Light. MC Light got a record where she talking about she did my little brother, okay? Michelle, got a record said if that's your boyfriend, he wasn't last night. You know, it's black sparring. Don't worry about it. We're just talking mess to each other. It's how we make love.
I still don't buy it.
Okay, well, you know, get a black man.
Yeah.
You might be called a bitch one night, and you'll be like, I'm not no bitch. You say, come here, baby, stop tripping. I love you, but you're still my bitch.
do you have...
That's just how we are. We talk it. I mean, I can't help it. I'm just saying how we are with it. You know, and you're going to... The ghetto is sexist. That's just what it is. I mean, you guys took us to the point where we done gone insane.
Well, I mean, but are you satisfied with being sexist, or is that something you'd like to change?
No, I'm not sexist any more than you are. I mean, I look at your butt and you look at my butt. I'm sexual. It's just like, yo, is Playboy sexist? Well, is Playgirl sexist? Is a female exotic dancer sexist? Is a male exotic sexist? I'm thinking, you know, let's just kick back and enjoy the ride. It's not that serious. There's homeless people out there.
My guest is rapper Ice-T. He has a new book called The Ice Opinion. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Noah Adams is with us. Noah, what's coming up on All Things Considered?
Hi, Terry. The White House has decided that Japan is in violation of previous agreements with the U.S. with regard to the American company Motorola. They make cellular telephones. There could be sanctions against Japan. Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader of Burma's democracy movement, has been under house arrest for more than 4 years now, and she has been allowed to talk with a U.S. congressman and with a reporter. I'll have a discussion about ground-based radar in Sarajevo and a conversation with a UNHCR spokesperson in Tuzla, a Muslim enclave in Bosnia surrounded by Serb forces. Some relief convoys are getting through there.
Thanks, Noah. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. My guest is rapper Ice-T. In the film New Jack City, in which I thought you gave, by the way, a really terrific performance, you played an undercover cop.
Right.
And for somebody who made records like Cop Killer, I wonder if you felt any empathy for cops while you were making that role.
Well, you know, like I said, when I made Cop Killer, I was portraying somebody other than myself. I can understand some of the ideas behind the Cop Killer. I mean, I can understand that being pushed to a maniac level. But when I did the movie New Jack City, I was kind of concerned. I'm like, oh, wow, I got to play the police. But it was more so, why does the answer to the problem have to be the police? Why couldn't I play just a citizen that wanted to change the city? Why, when the hero comes out, he ends up having to be the police? That was my little problem with it. But I talked around and I played it, and I played the cop that I wish all cops were like. I think I played a good cop, you know?
No, I think what you're saying is but I think what you're saying is interesting. That I mean you're making distinctions that there's good cops and bad cops.
Definitely.
And I think the reaction a lot of people had to Cop Killer was that you were saying that all cops are bad, period.
90% of the people didn't even listen to the record. Don't even know.
Well, I think that's probably true, that most people who had an opinion didn't hear it.
See, me and you, I'll discuss issues with you because I believe you understand me, and me and you could maybe sit up and we'll probably fight. But you got to remember that you can sit up with any person and it's going to be a cold day when you agree on every point on everything. So, but most of the people's attitude about Ice-T is what somebody told them or what they heard or something. Now, you know, I'm, you know, and also, like my name in my book, it's only my opinion. I'm not God, you know, and that's all I'm saying. It's like, yo, let's at least be real enough to say what you think. I'm not nobody special.
Well, you are very influential, though, especially to young people who really admire you so much.
The only way I'm influential is because I say what's on my mind. People are admiring people who have the guts to say what's on their mind, and everybody else is worried about, well, what do they say? I mean, think about it. Okay, I make movies. I do this. You couldn't possibly be worrying about a film career and sit up and say the stuff I say on the radio. You couldn't do that because you'd be, well, oh, wow, they might not put me in the next movie. I don't care. I don't care about these records, these movies, I don't care. I have to live my life from point A to point B, and that's saying what's on my mind. That's what I care about, being in tune with myself. And people respect that. That's why I'm on a college lecture tour. I'm on my way to Harvard or someplace to teach people how to be real. Isn't that stupid?
Is that what it feels like that you're doing, to go to Harvard to teach people how to be real?
Yeah, it feels stupid. It feels like, I mean, in the book, I have one thing where I say, isn't it funny you put me on a pedestal because I tell the truth? I say what I feel, that I'm on a pedestal. Isn't it a shame that everybody does it? But you're afraid right now. You're like, wow, if I say what I want to say. I mean, there's things you want to say probably, but yeah, if they'll take me off the radio or I won't get this sponsorship. And that's got to be a cold way to live your life. And I'm telling people, if you just go ahead and get it off your chest, you know, you'll feel much freer.
People might assume, though, if you really didn't care at all what other people think or what something pays or something, that you wouldn't have taken off Cop Killer from your record. Was about a year
ago? Well, if I wanted to make more money, I would have left Cop Killer on my record.
You think so?
Of course. Why not? I was saying, yo, you think that's how I'm making money, by putting this record out? Bam, I pull it off.
Why did you pull it off? And what were the pros and cons? Like, when you were trying to figure out, after the controversy about it, when Time Warner wanted it removed, what were your list of pros and cons? Why you shouldn't do it?
Well, the reason I shouldn't do it was because it will make me look like I wouldn't stand in my ground. But the problem was, the ground I was standing was the First Amendment, right? I wasn't out there to back up the First Amendment. I have no belief in this Constitution. It's a great piece of paper. It reads great, but it's not real, you know? It's something that we believe, you know, you have no free speech. Be serious. We can't say what we want to on this radio. If I say fuck, shit, bitch, dick, hoe, it's going to get beeped. It's beep, 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 because there's no free speech. Okay, now, people didn't come in and say Ice-T has the right to say Cop Killer, because the cops have been dogging black people since day one. An officer is nothing but an overseer from the plantation. It's just coming back at them. Black people, there's no black leaders that have ever loved the police unless they were a cop. So come on, back me on that. Oh, he has the right to. I don't agree with what he said, but he has the right. Yeah, well, I'm not with that battle right there. I'm not going to battle for your First Amendment rights, because you have no First Amendment rights. Then it got stupid. It was like, I'm on TV. Bush is yelling my name. I'm saying, wow, I ain't got no thermonuclear bomb. What is this? I mean, There's people out there doing, this is stupid. All this press time being taken up over this record. The record is not, now I'll pull the record. Then also I said, the real fans bought the record before all this hype. I don't want the rest of the people to get the record. I want the real fans to get it. And then also one of the problems was I started feeling people thought that's what I wanted. I thought people started saying, he wants this controversy. That made me look cheesy when I didn't want the controversy because the record had been out 6 months before the album hit. I mean, before the drama hit. So we pulled it. A lot of people said, oh, you sold out. You did it because of Warner Brothers. I ain't even on that label no more.
Let me ask you, you're a father now. Well, your father for at least a second time.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah. So you have a
daughter.
A new daughter?
No, a little boy named Ice.
Oh, okay. So you have a son and a daughter now?
Mm-hmm.
How does being a father affect you as a performer and a writer? Any impact of that?
Not really, because my daughter, she's been around, and so she knows all about the nasty lyrics. She loves them. She's the coolest kid at the school. You know, her little girlfriend's calling, your daddy be writing them nasty records. You know, I mean, you know, she's cool with it. She grew up around a house full of cursing and stuff. She don't curse in front of me. That's the way I grew up. My father cursed. I just didn't curse in front of him.
Uh-huh.
You know? But, you know, he cursed me out every day, but I never curse around him, you know? And then my little boy, I mean, she's a little revolutionary. She's intelligent. People always say, well, Ice-T, you guys are very aggressive and revolutionary. I'm like, yeah, but just wait on my kids and wait on their kids, you know. So I'm priming them up for the battle. And hopefully, you know, his name is Ice. His name is Ice. So he's just coming up, chip off the old block, I guess. I don't know. You know, he's going to be able to sit around the house and listen to me run this rhetoric off for 18 years. So who knows what he'll be. Hopefully he'll be a lawyer, a criminal lawyer, to keep me out of jail or something.
I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Ice-T, his new book is called The Ice Opinion. His latest CD is Home Invasion. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, and Joan Tuohy, with Nancy Greenlease and Sue Spolin. Research assistance from Louisa Shafia. I'm Terry Gross.
Take notes, real gangsters wear trench coat, gray suits, black ties, and they seek votes. And you're not to be misled. They'll kill you in your bed. They don't sell dope, yo, excuse me, yes they do. But they don't look that much like me or you. But if you pull up the sheets and expose them, they'll call up like snakes and show fangs of venom. Now I've been a soldier for years, representing the tattooed tears. Other brothers locked with no choice, left in the bowels of the devil with no voice. Phones are tapped, my crib is bugged, my car's tailed from club to club. And this ain't no joke, they wanna see a nigga broke. You can't slip if you slip, you're out. You gotta know what you're talking about. Drop science every chance you get, hit direct and indirect. Speaking cold cause you're never alone, that's why I use this low tone. Follow this and you might grow older. This is a message to the soldiers. Message to the soldiers.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations. Additional support comes from the George Gund Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a few companies dominate commercial activities worldwide. We'll examine what that means culturally and economically with John Cavanagh, author of the new book Global Dreams, Imperial Corporations and the New World Order. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.